Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm Jeff Howard, and this is going to be a fun one because I have two filmmakers here. I've got Todd Greenlee and Alex Greenlee. Hey, you two.
Hey there. Hey.
Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you both. So I met the Greenlees. I guess I'll call you the Greenlees. No, I should say I met Todd and Alex.
No, call us the Greenlees. That's fine. Everyone else does.
The Greenlees? All right. Well, yeah, you are in a special category because you were at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2022, last year, and your feature film, All Eyes, won the Grand Jury Award for Best Feature Film Horror, and it is a freaking, or not, we're allowed to curse here, by the way, it's a fucking fantastic horror
okay,
film.
Cool.
It's just cool. Fucking great. I love that film. As someone who watched the whole thing start to finish as, you know, as a member of the selection jury and then got to see it in the theater for that screening, it's just such a well-made film. And
thank you so much.
And I might as well say, so for those, because this is audio only, Alex and Todd are identical twins.
Yes.
And collaborators. Yes. Todd directs and Alex writes, although you know, like everyone, I don't know if you guys are like the Coen brothers where like they gave each other titles, but the truth is a little bit of co-writing, a little bit of consulting direction.
Yeah, with our first movie, we both directed it. The only reason Alex didn't direct on All Eyes is because he was having a kid. So.
I'm having my firstborn, so it would have been hard. At the time, I was living in LA. We shot All Eyes in Oklahoma, and so it would have been hard to be like, "Hey, honey, I know you're due any day, but can I go film a movie?" You know,
and not be there for the first, you know. 1 to 6 months that are so much freaking work. Yeah. So you did
maybe,
the right.
Maybe that would have worked. It would have been an excuse and I'd deal with a newborn phase. It's a film.
Yeah, but that's wonderful time. So congratulations, by the way, on the parenthood.
I was always joking with Alex. It's like he was having an actual baby and I was like having a movie baby pretty much. You know, making all lies. I was having
Same thing. Yeah. It's our baby. You know,
movies are absolutely children, and you put so much effort into them. And then, like, distribution is kind of like when they go off to college. You're like, "Fuck it, I can't do anything for them," and now they're on their own.
They're on their own. So they're the world's thing now. You know,
like I wish I could do something, but you find out like there's so little you can do once it's out there. Like,
well, yeah, I always joke with people. It's like it's always funny. I never really feel like the movies. Actually done until like I'm holding the Blu-ray or DVD of it, and then I literally can't do anything else to this movie. It's like I could, but no one's ever gonna see that version of it. So
yeah, there's something comforting though knowing that we can't do anything at that point, because it's just like, you know, reviews come in, people have opinions about it, and it's just kind of like that's it. We're not gonna go reshoot anything, you know. It's like the movie's done. It kind of just speaks for itself and lives out there on its own. It's pretty crazy.
For sure. And I'm gonna try my best. I don't know, I got this issue where I don't want to treat you as twins. You're individuals. You're freaking individuals. But I will mention that the crazy thing about Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2022 is, do you remember there were three films that came from twin brother filmmaking teams?
Yeah, we're taking over. You know, we call
that the Twinema movement. You know, it's just like a bunch of twin directors, and we've met quite a few. Actually, our DP for All Eyes is a twin, and him and his brother both make movies together. So it's just kind of crazy. I don't know what it is. Something about, I guess, the
I think they make a good,
pretty well.
Twins make a really good like filming duo, because you know we kind of have similar ways we think, and you
but
know,
different I, enough. Different. It's like it's good because you know, as the writer, I can approach Todd with ideas. And he's super honest. Like, there's the worst thing I can hear is nothing. Me pitching an idea, and he's like, "Okay." You know, it's like it immediately is like, "Well, if he doesn't, I know when it's a good idea when he gets excited about it." You know, when I say something, and I'm like, "Hey, I'm just thinking of this one idea," and then he'll respond with, you know, all these exclamation points, and I'm like, "Okay, I think I'm onto something here." Yeah. So we really do feed off of each other really well, and I think.
The visual guy, like, you know, we'll both pitch stories and talk about it. Alex is definitely, he goes off and writes it and comes up with ideas that I'm like, "Oh, that's crazy. You would come up with that." But then I can visualize how it's going to how we're going to do it and how it's actually going to get made, you know? So it's a good duo.
Which does, I mean, like when we were doing All Eyes, I'm not going to spoil what happens in the movie, but some, you know, the movie kind of takes a turn halfway through. And as I was writing that, it's a lot of action, you know, and I would just put later and then put this action and then later and then put all this action. And, you know, I'm just in my house, all comfortable and, you know, and Todd's out there filming and he'll call me in the morning that, hey, there's a, in the script, it says that there's a knife that goes in this guy's leg. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, how are we going to do that? And I was like, I don't know. Like it's the comfort. I don't want to like write in a box. You know, I kind of like to write out of my comfort and of things that we.
And I always tell Alex, I'm like, hey, you know, definitely don't write with a limitation. I mean, I can usually figure out what's possible and what, you know, like in All Eyes, there's a scene where he's like outside and there's a thing coming towards him and then there's gunfire. And I'm like, you know, we'll figure it out. But I think it's good.
You were, Todd, you didn't sound like that the day of.
I was pretty mad. I was like, it was like the day of and he was, I felt like I kept telling him, it was almost like he was on a lifeboat floating away. And I was just in the water, just like, you know, drowning. And he was just like on his little lifeboat. And I'm just like
drinking a margarita.
He's on the cruise ship. He's like, what do you mean?
Everything's great.
I wrote out the travel plan.
Well, I remember Alex it was like the knives. Cause I think going in All Eyes, like it is a very technical movie. I think we knew like going in and, you know, with most indie films, that's kind of how it happens. Like we probably knew like 80% of how we were going to do stuff. And then you kind of just go into this survival mode and you're like, we'll figure it out. You know, like there's a lot of stuff we'll just figure out. And so there's like definitely a lot of the traps and stuff in All Eyes. And I was like, I know how we're going to do some of it, but like the knife flying out of the closet gets into his leg and they have to pull it out. It's like all these things. And I'm like, and
you know, it's funny. I it's good having Todd there because I don't write thinking, can we do it? I just write if it looks cool. And yeah, I just wrote this one movie we want to do. And there's a scene that's very similar to like The Mist, you know, how The Mist comes in and it's just, or The Fog, and it's this very sinister thing. And I just wrote it. And I was like, we'll make it. We'll figure it out. And Todd has a background in VFX. And he's like, how are we going to do that? Like how is that going to look? Cause Todd told me like he's worked on big, huge budget movies that can't even get that to look right. You know? Yeah. So it's like, how are we going to get that to look right?
Yeah. Fog and Mist are like, and Smoke are like hard to, they're just hard to look right. Cause there's like so much stuff with it. But even logistically, I was like, I just think visually, like how things are going to play out. And I was like, Alex, I don't know. Like we're going to just have a long shot of like this fog coming in. I don't really know. Like,
It takes that for him to say that for me to be like, oh yeah, you're right. But it helps me kind of, I think, you know, that was my first thought was to put the fog, but it makes me think out of my comfort zone and be like, how can I be more creative? Because the reason I was thinking of that was because it's something I've seen before and other things. And so I'm like, okay, cool. This is going to put me in a position to kind of think more creatively and come up with a cooler visual that isn't fog, you know, and stuff that you've seen a million times.
For sure. And you're dealing, I mean, like All Eyes, the visuals are totally on point and all the booby traps and all the injuries and all the
practical
wild shit that happens looks great. But also, I guess you both would probably agree, right? That the audience's eye, even at the indie level, the demand for VFX that is believable has gotten so high that, if you do Mist, and as someone moves through it, it's not reacting to their physics. Yeah. Now, like it used, I mean, that used to happen, you know, just like when you watch a show that was recorded, like when you watch stuff that was filmed in the 80s and 90s, and like most of the car scenes are like a horrible green screen that's super fake looking when they're in a car. And like, you just can't get away with that anymore.
You know, what's cool is like, there's that movie, The Mist, that was kind of inspirational that movie, did you know that was originally, it was filmed in black and white. Like it was supposed to be shown at theaters in black and white. And because the VFX of the monster that shows up in the movie didn't look that great, you know, they shot it for black and white. And studios were like, no, I don't think people are going to buy it. People aren't going to see it if it's in black and white. So they changed it to color. And the movie, I mean, the movie still works, but then like when I learned it was originally supposed to be black and white, I saw the black and white version and I was like, oh, this is way better. This is like the ambience and just like the feel of the movie was like, that's how it was meant to be. And that's how they shot it. And I'm like, man, I kind of wish I would have seen that first, that version first. Cause it feels like a Twilight Zone episode, which I think was the intention, the original intention behind filming it that way.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. Well, hey, I am very late to the game with this, but when I first mentioned All Eyes, I should have had one of you say where people can watch it these days.
Oh, Todd.
Oh yeah. So it got released in was it 2022? Was that when it got released? But it's on
end of 2022. Yeah, November.
Gravitas Ventures, and it's on Amazon Prime, iTunes, Tubi. It's on Canopy if people have a Canopy account.
Which I like Canopy.
But you can also buy it on Blu-ray, DVD. It's like on all the, so you can get it most places. You can get a physical copy. But it's out there. We've been pretty fortunate with it. I feel like a lot of people are watching it, which is awesome.
It's been opening a few doors, I feel like, for us.
Yeah, it definitely has a lot of exposure. And it's just, you know, it's fun to see it getting a widespread. I think it's international now too. So,
it's a well-made horror film, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say it's a monster movie of sorts, and most indie monster movies disappoint and yours does not. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And cool. It more than doesn't disappoint. I mean, I already said, I think it's great, but you elevate it a little bit. Right kind of film, I think, to catch heat. And I would recommend, you know, I think Tubi and some of the others are the ones that put commercials in. People should be purists and pay whatever it is, $6.99, whatever it takes to watch it on Prime Video without commercials.
Totally agree.
It's not that long. I mean, it's a pretty good runtime. I think it's like an hour 27. It's like, you know, it's a good length to where it's like, just sit through it. Cause there's like a flow, and the most fun is watching it at festivals with people and in audiences, and when it does have this tonal shift, it's just a blast to watch. And
that was the feeling, was the first time we watched the movie with an audience was at the Houston Horror Film Festival in Houston, and it was a packed room of people, and I think that was the first moment I was like, why, this might not work, you know, like you're kind of hoping that like people are go along for the ride. And it is a packed theater. So you're like, if this doesn't work, it's going to be so uncomfortable. You know, it's going to be silent. And the scene where things kind of go crazy, everyone just, you could hear the air just get sucked out of the room. And people were just so out loud, just, you know, expressing like disbelief. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there we go. That's why you make the movie, you know, with an audience. And yeah, and people were cheering and, you know, people loved the character of Don and thought he was funny, and played by Ben Hall, who just did a fantastic job. And Jasper Hammer did a great job too. He, you know, he played Alan, and man, it's one of those feelings. It's like why we make movies is to watch it with an audience like that. You know,
I know you really have the perfect pairing there of the lead actor who carries the film and then the supporting character who steals every scene he's in. Dude, and your amazing lead embraces it, like you can tell, right, that Jasper embraced Ben. He knew that every scene that Ben was in was like Ben scene.
Every scene we shot with them together was just a blast. Like I feel like all we had to do is film, and it was just like this chemistry together. One of the first scenes we shot was in the movie. It's when they're kind of pulled to the side of the road in the country, and Don's like in the back of the truck and with his blindfold. And I remember filming that and being like, I think this movie is going to be pretty awesome. Just seeing that, like just that interaction, I was like, this is great. And like, they added so much to those characters. Well,
yeah. And we both met Ben for the first time. It was a phone call, mm-hmm. and just talking to him, I was like, this is the guy. Like, it's crazy when you meet somebody and you're like, this is who I was picturing as I was writing it, you know? And then you just see the level he brings to the movie. And you're like, the first thing I thought of was like, well, now he's going to be in every one of our movies. There's from this point on, I can write him into everything. And I'm sure he's going to just bring 110%. You know, I see him just popping up.
And it's fun to watch him. it's fun to watch him in other movies too. And he's so different in everything he's in. And it's I feel like Don was a cool character for him because it was a lot different from most of the stuff he had done. But yeah, he really just added so much to that, that part, just the look and the
emotion, man. There's that scene where he's talking about his dead wife and just his emotions he brings to the table. You're just like, dude, this is what a good actor looks like.
That was on the first day of shooting. We had to do it. And it's a monologue. It's like, and it's a lot longer we kind of trimmed it down a little bit, but like, it's kind of like this monologue he gives in the halfway point of the movie. And, we were going to shoot that like the last thing of his whole stuff was all shot in 3 days. Like the whole shoot was a 10 day shoot. His stuff was a 3 day,
which is insane. 10 days to shoot a whole feature. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, and the fact that someone's who's in what, like 70% of the film
is about
that character, and you only had him for 3 days.
Yeah. Well, we designed it like that. Cause we were like, we knew the most of the movie was going to be, Jasper. It was going to be Alan, but then we were like, let's write a cool character that's like the side character, but, design it in a way where he's in the whole movie, but we can shoot around it to be like, you know, where it's possible to do in 3 days. So like,
yeah,
we crammed all of his stuff in the first 3 days of the shooting, and to the point where like, after he wrapped, we were like, did we just film the whole movie? Like, what else do we have to shoot? But then, you know, we were naive because the whole scene within the room, like where things are going crazy, like that took like 3 days to shoot by itself, I feel like. So like,
yeah, you still had a week left, but yeah, also, I mean, that felt like that is sort of the heart of the movie with the two of them, but yeah, but Alan, the scenes with Jasper come before Ben's character is even introduced, and quite a bit in the grand finale. I mean, one of the things I love, and hey, before we start recording, we're talking about 4th of July, right? Like the film has a genuine grand finale.
What
I mean?
Yeah.
Which I also got to add, I bet that's one of the things that your audience has always loved is you got to have a great ending, right? Especially with action, mystery, horror.
Yeah, we're all about the mixing genres having that moment of pulling the rug from underneath the audience, you know? And, you know, we kind of play the beats of that you kind of notice and you kind of, they seem familiar, and then we just twist it and we just kind of have this huge fun of like, yeah, actually this is going a completely different direction than what you would have thought. Cause I think the way the movie's designed is you're like, what a sweet little moment, you know? Oh, and then you look at the runtime and you're like, my God, there's like 40 minutes left of this thing. Like, what could possibly happen from this point on, you know? And that's kind of the thing we replicate a lot in our movies. Is that
right? I mean, you fool us into thinking it's a film about podcasting.
Yeah.
But very quickly, I don't think that's a spoiler. Very quickly, it's about a podcast, an adventure that a podcaster happens to go on. But
podcasting
looks like it's central, right? In your introduction, you kind of do trick us into thinking it's going to be, you know, central to that.
Yeah. And that was a great tool, podcast. Yeah.
Podcast in the movies where, like, you know, our first movie we did it was called Home with a View of the Monster. It's also streaming if people want to check it out. It's on Shudder. We wanted to do a haunted house movie that wasn't about the haunted house. And so with All Eyes, we wanted to do a monster movie. It wasn't really about the monster, but there is a monster, you know, like there is a monster there, but it's more about like the house.
Yeah, crazy. The scene when we were doing our first movie, Home with a View. So it's the kind of thing we like to do is like have a horror element in the background. And then you have in the foreground, just this human thing with a bunch of heart, you know, and the Home with a View of the Monster, the scene we would always show people as we were making the movie was there's a scene in, The Sixth Sense. And it's the scene where it's the mom and they're in the car and she's talking to her son and he's talking about, he knows, you know, what happened. There's an accident ahead. And have you seen The Sixth Sense, haven't you?
Oh, of course.
Classic. Yeah. And that scene is so great because it's not about the horror element anymore. It's about just a mom and her son. And that moment is so great. You know, it's no longer, even though there's a scary thing going on, you forget that it's a horror movie.
Yeah. Even in the scene, you see a ghost and it's just kind of there. And then she walks away. And we always show that to people because we're always like, that is like 100%
the vibes.
The heart has to be there. So for us, we're like, that's very important for us. It like, it's more about the people and it's more about these like barely human moments, you know? And yeah, that was a good example though. We always show that to people.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, hey, I'm going to shift our gears because we've gone pretty deep on All Eyes. And like I said, normally in this podcast, we go back to your beginnings. So who wants to go first? You guys can take turns if you want, talking about when you first got inspired by film or writing or whatever. But how did you end up making feature films?
Our path is pretty the same, you know, pretty similar because we kind of did it going up together. And I mean, we've been into making movies and into movies since as long as I can remember. We were pretty young. But I think the first like thing I can actually consider as a cohesive story kind of short was probably, I was probably 13 or 14 when I did it. But even before that, we had a camera. We would always shoot random stuff. But we've just kind of always been into storytelling and movies kind of fell into that. And I remember there's like a moment, there's in Oklahoma, there's this thing called the Oklahoma Summer Arts Institute. And it's like for high school students. And it's all these different kinds of art forms. Like there's people that do orchestra, choir, painting, photography.
Acting.
And it just started doing film. And they get these like world-renowned artists to come in and teach the students for like 2 weeks. It's kind of a really cool like camp thing. And they had just started doing film when we were in, I think, was it junior high or something?
We were really close to high school.
Yeah, maybe junior high or something.
Yeah.
Our dad was like, hey, do you guys want to go watch some of these like films they had made? Like this, because at the end of the 2 weeks, they show like what the students had done. And I remember for us, like that was like the first time we realized, oh, this is like seeing students that are like not much older than us being like, this is a thing that people can do, like making movies and stuff. And
not only that, but other people enjoy, like we were like, we kind of viewed it as our little hobby. And you kind of had this realization, you were like, oh, other people enjoy doing this. And you see the instructors and they have a living doing it, you know, and such a cool realization of like, wow, maybe this is something we can do. You know?
Yeah, because we grew up in Altus, Oklahoma, which is, you know, it's not a big city, but it's like we didn't grow up with like a film. I mean, our parents are not film art people, but they liked it because we like it, and they kind of like and our school really didn't have anything, but they supported it. They supported what we were doing, and so it's just cool to see these other students are from around the state doing it, and we're like, okay, this is like something. So then, you know, as we were kind of getting older, we would make these shorts, and we would kind of get more into it, and then we went to University of Oklahoma for film. And we just kind of like kept doing it. Like we didn't really have a plan B of like, maybe we get to college and it doesn't work out. And then we do this other thing. It's like, no, we just kind of kept on doing film.
And then I remember, yeah. So then after college, Todd moved to New Orleans and worked as a production assistant. And then I moved to LA and worked as a production assistant. And, I think how many, like 3 years we were doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's fun. You have a good time, working on big movies and stuff. But I think then eventually Todd moved to LA. And I remember there was a moment I was driving him to his apartment in Tarzana. And we were just like, we had this moment at the same time. We were just like, hey, let's just make something. You know, I'm tired of, you kind of hear a lot of people talk about, you know, working on a screenplay they've been working on for 10 years and it's going to be the best movie ever, but they never take that next step to just make it. And so we, in that car, we bought a plane ticket for us, a plane ticket for Jasper, who was in our first movie. We didn't know what the movie was going to be, you know, and we were just like, in 3 months, we're going to make a movie, you know, and in Oklahoma. And we kind of had an idea of the location, and then it just kind of, I think putting yourself on a time limit like that is one of the best things creatively for you, because you kind of have to go into survival mode and figure things out, and then it just works out. And then I'm, And if we hadn't done that, nothing would have happened. You know, we would have just kept making excuses about making movies instead of actually making movies.
And our philosophy was like, no matter what, we're making a movie, even if it's like just us and Jasper in a location, like we're making something. And it's like, regardless of money, like, you know, how many crew members, like we weren't really like, we just wanted to make something. And luckily for us though, like it just slowly, and I guess maybe this is how it is with indie film, is like things just kind of piece together. When you start to actually, when the train's moving, things are going to like come together. And, you know, you don't have to have 100% of the stuff. I mentioned this earlier. You don't have to have 100% of the stuff figured out. You just kind of like get enough to where you can do it. So we shot, our first movie was 2017. It was in 2017. It was like a 15-day shoot,
mm-hmm.
in Oklahoma. And it was
super
like,
low budget.
Our crew, it was like a, the main cast was like four people, maybe five. And like, but then our crew just kept, each day I feel like we, people would hear about it and we would just get more and more people coming in for free. And it was just like a summer camp. It was because we were like this Grand Lake in Oklahoma and it was like a cabin. It was like, you know, a lot of our cast and crew have gone on to do awesome stuff. Like a lot of our, I think there's a lot of the people that worked on Minari that, you know, worked on our mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah.
Just a really fun experience. And, but you know, we did learn a lot. Like that was our first experience with like distribution and, just a feature film is like a different,
I think story too. I think just figuring out beats and I remember being in the editing room and being like, man, you just want to get to the house. You know, you kind of, you know, there's the whole opening scene is them in the woods and you kind of get to the point where you're like, the movie is right here. And I feel like there's like a big chunk that you just want to get to the house, you know, and
that is a lot slower pace.
Big lesson, slower pace.
Yeah. That one was a lot slower pace of a movie. But I love it. There are things I loved about it. Like, cause we wanted to do like this horror movie, but it was like this,
you don't know what the horror, you don't know what the haunted house until like halfway in the movie.
And it's more about these people. And I think there's things that like really, really work about it. But then it's like, yeah, the story, we needed to like pick up the pace, you know, it's like when you're watching with an audience, it might feel good for us, but then when you start to see it with people, you're like, oh man, this is like,
you can feel it kind of drag, but then you can feel it when it works, you know, you can feel it when the movie becomes the movie and you're like, you try to recreate, like, why was that? Like what creates that difference, you know? And you got to listen to the audience.
Yeah. And we honestly use every thing we film as like as a learning experience. And like, you know, that one, we don't, you know, as of now, we haven't made these like huge budget movies. Like a lot of our movies are like really, really low, really, really, really micro budget films. But I think it's a good way to learn because, you know, there's less pressure as far as like, oh, if this doesn't work, we spend like $1 million on this. It's like, no, we never had to compromise. Like a lot of stuff we do, we write specifically for knowing that what we can do and what we can get. And we're just like, oh, we learn that thing from this, whether it's production or whether it's story,
contracts, like getting things written down.
There's so much
we learned that the hard way.
There's so much to making a movie and it's like, we learn stuff and then we incorporate it instead of it be like harping on it. We're going to like finish the movie and then make the next one and incorporate that stuff. So with All Eyes, like it was definitely more of like that one came about because it was 2020 during the pandemic and Alex is working, but I work in the film industry and there's nothing going on. So I was like, hey, if you want to write something, I'll go off and shoot it. And it was a similar thing where it's like, we just wrote it around while we could get it.
I think it was ironically, as we were just on the meeting with Jasper, we hadn't talked to him for a while and we were like talking and then he had gotten off the meeting and it was just Todd and I, and we were just like, let's do another movie. You know, it was just kind of, and then the movie just, literally, I think within a week, the movie was casted and we had it.
I was in Oklahoma, like, you know, prepping it, like, because there's a lot of prep that went into that one.
And luckily for us, we had already kind of had the idea. We had been baking that for a little bit and you know, changed some things around. And man, it was like, that was a fast moving train. I think everything, it was bizarre how fast that worked. It worked out really well.
It's a similar thing with like Home with a View is like where, you know, even a week before, like we didn't have the whole cast and crew. And it was like, all of a sudden, you know, a week before you start to hear from this person who's like, yeah, I can help out. And you hear this other person that wants to help out. So it's like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, we have a whole This is like a whole, yeah. It's like a movie.
I remember being at a pool party and talking to some of our friends who were going to help. And like within that moment, they were just like, oh yeah, I'm going to be there too. And I was like, what? And then all these people were like getting their plane tickets and stuff. And I was like, oh man, this is cool. I didn't know that this was going to happen the way it was. And it became like another summer camp.
Yeah. The set was like a lot like the first movie where it was like very chill, very, I mean, we worked, it was a, that one was a lot of hours because we were cramming a lot into 10 days, but it's like, it just felt like a summer camp. Like everyone was, you know, everyone was chill. Like we, on the weekend, we would take off and just be by the pool. It was during the summer. And it was like, you know, just that whole group of people were a blast and very talented. Like there's a, you know, just getting these people together, like our cinematographer, Austin, our gaffer, Grip, James, Ray, it's like just all these people coming together is like, you know, is a dream team.
Yeah. You can't really make a movie, but it's kind of hard to make a movie alone, you know, so it's and having again, a lot of people who are talented.
We would have made something. Like that's the whole goal is like, we would have made, regardless, we would have made something, but it's like, I'm just happy that it turned out the way it did, where we were able to make this better version of the movie. Cause like things pieced together, you know, so.
People helped us out tremendously.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, I mean, all right. So Home with a View of the Monster, that was you on a drive to Todd's apartment. You just said, hey, let's make another film or let's, and you had made shorts in college.
Oh, just shorts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We had made
the shorts and you just, and in that moment, and you're both work, you know, whatever you're doing, like in that moment, you're like, and we're going to make a feature.
Yeah. Well, because like our thing was like, we had done a lot of shorts and we had made, we had wanted to make a feature, but it kind of just kept like, you know, we were under this, you kind of start to try to piece one together and it's like, you, people are saying how much money it's going to be. It's going to be like, you have to raise all this money. And we're like, oh man, I guess that's just how it's going to be. And then finally we were like, we had this big one we wanted to make and we were just like, it just wasn't going to happen. It was just like,
I think too, is like the amount of energy we were going to put into it. We were like, we might as well, I mean, we're going to put the same energy into a short, you know, so let's just make it a feature, you know?
And am I wrong to think that your, Oklahoma ties are like your secret weapon for filmmaking?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
And plus you get everyone out there and they're having a, whether they're people based there or people who came out for you. Yeah. You sort of, you know, like I'm always jealous actually of film festivals that take place like outside of LA. Cause then you get everyone together and they're just about the films. Like there's nothing else to do. Right. So like you probably, whatever budget it was for Home with a View, it probably would have been a short in LA, but it could be a feature out in Oklahoma.
100%. We were able to do stuff we would have never, I mean, we would have been able to do in LA, but it's like, it would have been so expensive. And it was like, you know, when you're in Oklahoma, when we were filming, it was like, we could get people to be like, oh, I have this place. If you need people to stay, you can just have them stay here for free or whatever. And, even for All Eyes, like there, you know, there's a radio station in the movie. And we were just like, we knew some people that own the radio station. And I said, oh, yeah, you guys can film here for like.
And they had their own cleaning crew for COVID. And
they had a cleaning crew come in every, because it was in the thick of things and during the pandemic.
It legit looked like a scene out of ET, like, or Close Encounters. It was really bizarre.
Every day we would finish filming, it was like really late. And like these people in hazmat suits would come in and just spray down the radio station. It was very surreal. But like, it was a. Yeah, it's just like these people come together and like really help out. And, you know, here in LA, it's like a lot of, I mean, I love LA and I want to eventually make a movie here, but it's like, you know, a lot of people expect something, you know, it's like a lot of people are like, there's always a catch and it's always like, oh yeah, you guys can film here, but it's going to be like a crazy amount of money or it's going to be like, you know, you need a lot of like permits, which you need permits and stuff in Oklahoma. But it's like, there's just more, you can, your money goes a lot further.
Yeah, we joke. If you were to film it at a church in LA, they would be like, cool, that'd be like, what, $5,000. And then if you wanted to shoot at a church in Oklahoma, they would be like, cool, we'll make you a casserole. You know, like there's not really, there's a huge difference there as far as the way they approach, you know.
I know filmmakers are like, we'll shoot in Idaho and they'll say like, you know, we asked a local bar if we could shoot there and they said, well, can we add one condition? They're like, what? Can we watch?
Yeah.
You know, and whereas every bar in the LA area is going to be like, All right. Well, when a film scout calls, I normally quote them 10,000 for a day. Yeah. You know, it's because, you know, here there's just too much. You're competing with this, what the studio budgets are.
Mm-hmm. Luckily for us, like there is, you know, Oklahoma does have a really cool film scene. Like there's a lot of stuff that are, especially most recently, there's a lot of cool stuff that are filming there or have filmed there. And the Oklahoma Film Office, like, you know, we have a pretty long running relationship with them, and there, it's just great to have. It's almost like we can just be like, hey, we need this location, and they'll help us research how to find it. And it's just easy. You know, it's very easygoing. It's like they're great people and a really great community there. So, yeah.
Do they have incentives and stuff for you? Or?
A lot of our movies are so fast as far as like production, you know, inception to like the production and stuff. We never really utilize it. And also, ours are very low budget. But I think eventually we would want to, they do have incentives, really, really good incentives. And eventually we will utilize that. But yeah, a lot of our.
Right. But yeah, actually the incentive question, but incentives mean you're hiring X number of local union type people and this and that. And,
which we already are, you know.
But you're also getting a lot of help from friends who are just there, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, and also beyond that, beyond the actual film community, like the actual community of people like restaurants and the city councils and the, you know, chambers and stuff, like they really do help out and they're very nice and friendly with like production.
Yeah, we shot All Eyes in the small town of Hobart, Oklahoma, and when we got there, we were shooting the scene in the square, the town square, and they had on the old movie theater, they had on the marquee, welcome Homefront Pictures, you know, and we were like, man, that's they had somebody mow the grass and like,
yeah, they mowed the grass up for us in the town square. They mowed it for us. There's a people that in the town that like came out to be extras. Like, and it was like, it felt like a big set. Like, cause it was like, we had a lot of cool gear and stuff. It was like just all these people coming around watching us shoot. And it was like, oh, this is cool. This is really fun.
Yeah, getting support from the entire town is massive. I mean, I assume Alex's writer brain is like, oh man, what more can I write in this town? Now we got a town square, we can, you know, it's because honestly, like I remember how that town looks on screen, right? Because you go to the post office and this and that, and like, like it's, you know, it's almost got like the Back to the Future small town, you know?
Yeah. So legit, we could legit shoot Back to the Future there. Like it has that vibe, you know, and you know, again, like everyone couldn't be any friendlier than they were. And grateful for that.
I think it's definitely an example of like, right, what you know, because like we definitely know, we grew up around that area. We grew up like, you know, around small towns and stuff. And I just, you know, when you write what you know, it's like it feels more lived in and real. And like Dawn, for example, in All Eyes, like is based a lot of off our grandpa. And it's like, you know, a lot of his mannerisms and his like person. I mean, our grandpa wasn't this crazy.
That's crazy. But I think one cool thing about that is, you know, I just,
he's not crazy
wrote,
though, but yeah, well, maybe he, wrote, maybe he yeah. is.
I wrote that, you know, with that in mind. And it's crazy how some of the people talk about, they're like, man, I know somebody like him. And I think there's something there when you're writing what you know, something universal kind of gets out there and speaks to people, you know, and they just little mannerisms and things that the character has, people are like, I know somebody like that. And I'm like, that's kind of what we aim for, you know.
Well, and it adds, besides the production values you get, it adds character, right? That community adds character because, you know, we've seen a jillion films. Like you can, you know, I mean, it's a little fun for me as a native Angeleno, like third generation, to like, you know, see a coffee shop like Patty's and on a TV show, like when they drive by or something. But, you know, we've just seen LA, New York to death. So showing that town in Oklahoma, it just adds uniqueness and production value.
I like seeing locations that feel lived in, you know, and, you know, you see some movies and it's like, that's clearly a diner that was decorated that day. And I like seeing stuff in movies where it's like, this feels like it's been around for years. Like, that we just happen to film and capture that. Yeah.
Especially in Oklahoma, there's like, you know, a lot of the times movies shoot there, they'll, if it's a small town, it'll be like Guthrie or something, you know? And it's like, so things, you start to see a lot of the same kind of places, but it's like Hobart, like no one ever shoots there. So like, it was just cool to see this side of the state that no one really sees and, or, you know, on screen. And, I don't know, it just feels like unique and, you know, you don't really see that a lot. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And something I learned during this chat is that Jasper is like your John Goodman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We would use him and everything. He's so fun to work with.
So he started in your student film?
We met him through in school at OU. And he did this really weird short about that he directed and he was starred and he played this puppet, like a really drunk sock puppet. And I remember Todd was like, he was in Todd's class. He's like, you got to watch this short film. This guy did. And I remember watching that and just cracking up. And I think from that point on, we were like, we got to put this guy in movies. And we did a lot of short films with him in college.
One of my favorites, we did one called Cake and Blood. And he's at a party and accidentally killed the guy. It's like a surprise party. Accidentally killed the guy that they're supposed to be surprising, but everyone is just waiting for this guy to show up. He's like, I don't know how to get rid of the body.
He hit him on the way to the party and he has his truck in the garage and he's getting his friend to be like, what do I do? You know, how do I get rid of the dead body? And he just knocked it out of the park. I mean, he was so funny and naturally talented in that scene, in that movie, you know. And then from that point on, we were like, and if you watch Home with a View, the monster, he plays a totally different character than he does. And I mean, that just shows you the talent of him. He's just fun.
He's fun to be around too. He's like, when you're filming Home with a View, like the first week and a half of shooting, he wasn't really in the movie. He was like kind of, but he's hanging around just like helping getting lunches and stuff. And we started filming his scenes. I think most of the people didn't even know he was in the movie. And then we started filming his scenes and everyone was like, oh my God, this guy is like, he actually can act.
They thought for a little bit, they thought he was just like a PA.
Yeah, they thought he was a PA for the movie. And he's like, we're like, the first thing we shot, he has like an axe. He's like breaking out a door and screaming and stuff. And everyone's like, oh my God. I remember just the filming that, everyone just being like, oh, who is this guy? It's like, yeah, he's, and yeah. So we would use him in everything. He's very diverse with his performances and just a fun guy to be around.
I mean, I'm not blowing smoke up anyone's butt when I say that when I watched All Eyes, I was sure this was someone that you know, saw 500 people, 1,000 people in LA and a big casting call and ended up with this guy. Plus, I mean, I'm just going to throw in the joke that like, when he finally does end up shirtless, I'm like, well, fuck, that's an actor. That's not a podcaster.
Let's not feed his ego here, you know.
Hey, fair. He deserves it. I mean, I'm he's clearly super talented.
And, you know, that guy, Jasper, he's such a team player and he's every screening we would do, like he would just try his best to be there. And I'm like, man, what? He's such a good guy. Yeah. And we're super lucky to have met him.
But now I'm going to jump on to your mentioning Cake and Blood and the concept there. And so have you always been drawn to dark, funny / horror stuff?
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's dark comedies, horror. That's kind of our wheelhouse over here. I think there's so much you can do with it, you know, and I love scaring people and making suspenseful moments. And even if you're just doing a movie that's like a family drama, if you do a little dash of horror in there, it just kind of makes it a little more interesting, you know, and it doesn't have to be a jump scare type of horror movie. You know, the ones that kind of come to mind are Hereditary and The Babadook are two movies that are so great because they're not about the jump scares. They're about this, the family, you know,
it fills the viewer with a sense of dread and eeriness.
Exactly. And it just feels like that. It just happens to be in a horror movie. Like it could have been in, yeah.
another one I really liked was the new Invisible Man movie.
Great movie.
That one was good because it was about domestic abuse, but it was told in the story of like a horror movie. And it was like, but it felt really grounded. It felt very like, oh, this could maybe happen, maybe not. But it's like, I like stuff like that where it's more about something else, you know, and then the horror element's just there. So I think horror is just really fun to play with that kind of stuff because, you know, horror has a great, you know, I love the fans of horror. I love horror movies, and it's just, I think there's like the people you're going to get watching it, I think it's a lot more fun to play with that. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and there's such a horror renaissance that I think pretty much came about because as much as, and we're talking now during a triple strike in Hollywood, but, you know, writers and then SAG and AFTRA, but I think the streaming, the way streaming arose, I think it created this horror renaissance where you really can, because I grew up in the 80s, right? I was in high school in the 80s, and mm-hmm. so it was slasher or nothing, you know, and it really got pretty boring. Like, it got as boring as a superhero movie, like, you know what's going to happen, you know? Plus the question mark at the end, you know, did the slasher get away? Like,
they'll be back, you know. You know what's funny though? There's that movie, Sleepaway Camp? Is that the one? The whole classic horror slasher movie from the 80s. And, you know, watching that today, I'm like, I can see the indie aspect of it. And I can respect, like, I know what they were doing here. I know, like, it probably wasn't a big crew. A shoestring budget, and they did
all of it. It was always disrespected by Hollywood, right? I think that's why. But they always made more with a low budget. I mean, honestly, Halloween was an indie film, right?
Oh, it was best example. I think that's such a
and Nightmare on Elm Street. Those were low budget features. Those were, you know, you could make 10 of those for one movie with race cars or whatever.
Yeah, and I feel like for us, like if we were to ever tackle that genre, which I can totally see us doing, you know, it would be very similar to the way we're doing ghost stories and the way we're doing monster movies, which is like, that's kind of just in the background. And it's more of just in the foreground, there's another story going on, you know, it's something more, relatable and universal going on in the foreground. And then the background, there just happens to be something going on, you know, and that's, I really dig that.
I really loved Barbarian. That movie,
one of my favorites. Yeah,
watching that, be honest, this is 110% something we would do. You know, it's like I love that because it does pull the rug out from other people. Get Out, similar way, where it's like, you know, it's a horror movie, but there's a lot more to it. And I'm happy that there's like nowadays there's more of that kind of horror. That is like kind of the stuff we do. And
The Exorcist is like that, though. If you kind of think back, The Exorcist is very, it moves very slow in a good way, and it's super grounded-ish, you know, and that movie just, I just would love to recreate that vibe, you know, I think that's probably that movie alone probably drives the way we make movies, you know. It's just, time.
It's shot where it doesn't feel like, I mean, it's shot like a big movie. It's shot like a, you know, drama kind of, and it's like, but it's a horror movie. And the Sixth Sense was the same way, where it was like, it was shot like warm colors and it feels like, you know, it's just, but it's like a horror movie. So it's like, it's, I like that kind of stuff. Like that tone of where it's like a grounded kind of world that they.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you're naming like the greats, and I'm going to finally do it. Like, I've got a 15-year-old who, she only watches horror. Like, that's all we watch together.
You're doing a good job.
And after, thank you. And after what was it? Conjuring and Insidious and this and that, I finally looked, turned to her and I went, okay, this is demonic possession. You were watching The Exorcist Saturday night. We are going to watch The Exorcist. Oh, she gets into it from frame one, even though like the whole thing, it is slow paced and it starts with archaeology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just rewatched it a week ago, maybe. And it was like,
The scene where like he goes and the priest talks to his mom who's sick and it just takes its time.
I like how they let stuff breathe. Like there's moments where like in a movie nowadays, it would be like, we have to speed it up. But there's like the whole scene where it's like after the first attempt of the exorcism, it's like the two priests just sitting there in silence. And it's just like this really cool scene. And then there's like later on, there's a scene where the priest is like down there and the mom shows up and they have a moment. I'm like, you know, movie nowadays wouldn't like spend time on that kind of stuff. But I do like that we're kind of seeing it more now.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
On the human element.
I mean, yeah. Movies that just take their time. And I think that's, you know, let it breathe.
I realize the next podcast I'll be asking you for your favorites and everything and that four questions thing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, when you two were young, do you remember seeing horror? Like when you were too young to see it?
Twilight Zone, I guess would be kind of close. Twilight Zone. And
even it's funny. Like we watched all the old, like, you know, Frankenstein, Nosferatu, Dracula. We watched all that. Like on VHS. We still have the VHS tapes.
Even Abbott and Costello.
Abbott and Costello.
Frankenstein and all that.
The Mummy meets Frankenstein. Yeah, no. And it's funny because Twilight Zone is seminal and it's like the greatest lesson in screenwriting of all time watching that show, right? But but it definitely instilled an appreciation for sci-fi and horror in at this point, six generations. I don't know how many generations.
We were lucky also because we grew up in the 90s and Are You the Afraid of the Dark was on Nickelodeon, and that was kind of like the Twilight Zone for
Goosebumps,
children.
Like, in a way. It was still
pretty scary for like a kid's thing, and it was like being exposed to that, I think, was huge because like it was like these actually legit cool stories, and pretty they weren't really holding back on this.
I think what was cool about the Twilight Zone was how every episode, and they were throwing these episodes out like I think twice a week. They were doing these, and every single episode had such a like point of view, you know, it had a message it was trying to say. And there's actually these recordings you can hear Sterling talking about when he would write at movies or write the shows, like he would record in a device, and hearing him talk out loud his thoughts, you're like, man, this dude was smart. Like he was so ahead of his time, and like he just could see the full picture, you know, and like what he was trying to say. And I'm like, man, I try to replicate that. You know, I hope to be like that.
And for television, I mean, it was straight up cinema. Like
it really was. Even
made, you know, it was cinema.
Alfred Hitchcock Presents was very similar. It was literally a Hitchcock movie every week and a short film every week. And it's like, how
I know in the same,
people,
right. It was the same era where there was just dumb sitcoms where everything took place in one room. And then they're doing something unique every week.
I remember there's an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents that involved a deaf lady. And I remember that was this, there's a twist in it, obviously, because it's Hitchcock. And I just remember thinking, I was like, wow, that was really smart. Like the way it plays out and the way the twist is revealed. And you're just like, man, that was really smart, you know? And just above and beyond of what
I was addicted to that show as a kid. Although I have to admit, I don't know if it's from repetition or not, but right, like Twilight Zone is so funny. Like you can just name the log line of almost any Twilight Zone episode and remember it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, I'm not, my memory bank is failing me because I think Hitchcock, it always just kind of stole your attention when his introductions were so entertaining.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too. Again, I'm a huge Hitchcock fan and I love his movies. And it's like, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing, man, he probably wasn't a great person. You know, I've heard, same with Charlie Chaplin. I don't think he was a great person, but like, man, you really respect like the stuff he made. You're just like, oh man, it's just on another level.
Yeah.
I won't get into the, I try to not be an apologist for the past, but it definitely is hard to the system that they lived in, right? The ocean that you know, whatever. It was pretty hard to be a decent person, although maybe Chaplin was a decent, I mean, they all treated women horribly, but that was our whole society. But like Chaplin did United Artists with other people, including Pickford, right? So he obviously could cooperate with people.
I think to get to that point in that time, you definitely had to be kind of an asshole, kind of.
I don't know. Yeah.
But you had to look Jack Warner. You had to sit across a desk from Jack Warner and tell him that shit could be your way too, right?
Hitchcock literally thought the actors were cattle, kind of. He just treated them like that. But, you know, he made incredible movies. Like, the movies he made were great. But, yeah, he just, different time, you know, different way of thinking.
Different time, yeah. But, yeah, we're you know, again, like Twilight Zone, I think that's kind of the big inspiration for us when we were younger. Surprisingly, we were the weird kids watching the Twilight Zone.
Right. And then as you got older and you started creating your own stuff, those influences were there.
Oh yeah. They've just always been there. I feel like all eyes, we literally reference Twilight Zone. We're like,
yeah, really. I love. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a literal reference? Like they refer to it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's like, this is a prop from the Twilight Zone. Like, it's like a ashtray.
Little ashtray. Yeah. Yeah. Like, that was a fun little reference.
At Don's like, my uncle was a set decorator on the Twilight Zone. He gave me this prop. And he's like, what episode was it? He's like, does it matter? He's like,
I love that little throw. I love that little line because it kind of shows you the difference between the two of them, like why they find important, you know. And to Don, it's more about what it makes him feel and why who had it, who gave it to him, you know. That's more important, is who gave it to him. And Alan is more focused on like the story behind it, you know. And it's the difference between the point of views. Neither of them are wrong. You know, it's just like how they view things.
And that is very much their characters, right? One guy is a podcaster who goes deep into stories.
Details, yeah.
And the other is a nostalgic older man.
Yep. Yep.
Excellent. Well, so what are you working on since All Eyes? I actually think, yeah, wasn't Shermanooks Film Festival kind of like your last, was that your button on your festival run?
Yeah, that was the last of the festival run. Yeah, we've just been kind of lucky with it's having a pretty successful streaming life, you know, and people are still watching it, which is cool. And but right now, yeah, we have a few movies we're wanting to do. Hopefully soon. Like Alex is writing a few of them right now.
Yeah, I like to go through the process of writing. So I wrote the first draft to a movie, and I like to sit on it for a little bit and get far enough from it so I can go back to it and then be like, oh my God, this is a piece of shit. And then figure out what doesn't work. It's just super important. I think that gets all the bullshit out of the way. And then I'm currently working on two scripts, back and forth kind of, that I'm super excited about, you know. And you know, we sit on ideas and we'll have an idea, and it's just the ideas that we end up making are the ones that we're kind of just like, man, we just can't stop thinking about it, and we keep going back to it. The one we're writing now is something that we're just like, man, I think there's something here, you know. So,
and as with each movie, we're hoping to, you know, just raise it a little more as far as like what we do, what we're, you know, what we try to do with it. So we're definitely going to
scope. Yeah. Bigger scope.
It's going to be a lot bigger.
Well, is that because your toolbox is getting bigger and your experiences? So you know, you can take on bigger challenges.
100%. Yeah. It's also just fun to constantly grow as a filmmaker. And, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff we can do now, just to raise the bar a little more. I would love to, there's definitely would be great to have a bigger budget, which is, you know, definitely possible. And even just having like bigger actors in it. Like, I mean, I love to use Jasper and or I would use them still, like Jasper and Ben, but like having some known actor in it would be great, you know, and just kind of be able to get more eyeballs on the movie.
For sure. And now you're establishing a track record and you can show people how many eyes have been on All Eyes.
Yeah. And we've shown we can make a movie for nothing and get it released. So hopefully if we can be like, hey, if you give us a budget, even if it's like, you know, not a huge budget, but like we've been making these movies for like nothing. So, and the way it is like with filmmaking is that's why I don't want to like put too much on the money side. Is like, we'll make a movie no matter what, you know, and to an extent, like, you know, there's only a certain amount where it's going to be, you're going to be making the same movie. You're just going to be like paying people more or be, you know, instead of like people doing it for free, you're paying them. So it's like, I think there is like I think it's good we did it the way we did. Cause we kind of know what to
expect down the line.
Yeah. Cause making movies are expensive. You know, there's a lot of stuff.
But it's also fun. You know, we have fun doing it.
Yeah. We have a blast doing it. So, yeah, hopefully we maintain that. I want to just maintain like a chill set and help people having fun doing it, you know, because that's the most important part.
For sure. Well, it'll be very fun for me to follow along and watch what you do as you go. Cause I mean, you're doing it right. And it sounds like, you also have the same freedom. I remember an interview with, I think Joel and Ethan Coen, where they said, you know, when we present something to Warner Brothers and we're like, this one will take, you know, 60 million. And if they say no, we go, okay, we have another script we'll just make with this indie thing for 2 million. Like they have the freedom that they're like,
oh yeah,
we don't need your money. We'll make something on our own.
Yeah. At all really times, like, I feel like, yeah, if we have like 5 ideas at all times, like different budget levels, you know, and you know, you always want to be prepared. These are things you can do and just be ready. That's how you can be.
And do you see yourselves? I know you said like you'd like to make one in LA, mm-hmm. but like you still leaning on the Oklahoma connection?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, as long as like, you know, some of our movies start with a location in mind. So we know Oklahoma, you know, if that keeps guiding us there, that would be great. But there, you know, we're always open to filming different places, but
I think you should personally. I mean, yeah. I just think it works. I think it works so well to, yeah.
We know it. It's like, just keep writing what we know.
And I mean, the farm, I know it's a family farm, right?
That it actually, it, on,
I, but that is cinematic as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think since we shot, it got torn down by a tornado, like a whole tornado completely went through.
Wiped it out.
Yeah. So sadly,
the house is gone too. We had to burn that thing
house,
down.
The house, the workshop, everything's completely gone. But yeah, we like
it. Lives on in the movie. It lives on in the movie.
I'm happy we put in the movie though, because it will always live on in there. But yeah, we, you know, Oklahoma, there's a lot of cool places to shoot. There's a lot of character. Like, you know, I've been watching, I don't know if you see the show Reservation Dogs, but that show's awesome. That's shot in Oklahoma. And there's a lot of stuff they film that you're like, this is a cool look to it. You know, there's a lot of cool stuff there. Especially the most recent episode, there's a lot of cool stuff they did in like the 70s. But yeah, I think there's a lot to do there. And also with the state, like all the corners of the state, there's different landscapes and stuff. So I feel like there's a lot to do there to film.
Yeah,
for sure. Excellent. Was there any, anything else you want to mention before we
wrap it up? This is fun. I love, awesome. I always love kind of talking about this stuff. We love movies. So the more we talk about it, the better.
Well, you're going to enjoy answering the 4 questions just as much, I assume. But hopefully I can get you to arguing a little bit. Hopefully, you know, not that it's about arguments, but
you're opening a box with these questions. So
yeah, well, I mean, but you know, it's chill because it's just, you know, it's not like name the best films of all time. Just name a favorite. Like, you know,
for sure.
I used to think maybe I should ask guilty pleasure, but I'm like, no, like if. Sometimes people have the balls or the guts to put a guilty pleasure as a favorite. Like, just admit, you know what? I love this really stupid 80s comedy that everyone thinks is a piece of crap, but to me, it's special.
Oh, no, we have all of those. So I have guilty pleasures and all that. So
excellent. All right. Well, is there like a website or social media that like someone should, that like links to all the Tubi links and all that?
Yeah, we have a website, it's homefrontpictures.com, but we also have Instagram as homefrontpics, and then we have an All Eyes Movie Instagram. So like all of those, we always put updates about our stuff. Mm-hmm. We put like behind the scenes pictures and just updates of like what's going on with the movie. So the Homefront Picks definitely is like one that we will always like be updating, like as we're doing new movies, we'll be talking about it there. So.
Cool. Excellent. And, well, congratulations on everything.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Especially, I love hearing, you know, needless to say, the indie film world is a son of a gun and features I love. Often I hear back from people. They're like, yeah, we went out there into the streaming world and the AVOD world. AVOD, you know, for those, I assume people listening to this would understand what AVOD means. If not, Google AVOD. But But, you know, a lot of people, it's tough, you know, tough. So it's great to hear that, that something like All Eyes is getting the respect and the attention it deserves.
Definitely very fortunate. You know, I know it's not always like that with indie film, but we were, you know, super fortunate that it's had a life, or it's still having a life, and a lot of people are watching it. So
it's all we can ask for. Yeah. So we like.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I will wrap us up with I'll try to be brief, although it's not very brief. But by the way, both of you, remind me to do a screen grab of us smiling as the photo for the Discover Indie Film website. Because at the very top of my notes to like introduce you and stuff, it said take pic in like five times the size of the font. And I didn't. So anyway, I hate forgetting to do that. So anyhow, I just mentioned the website. So if you want to check out the website for this podcast or the TV series that was born from the podcast, it's discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And I did mention the TV series. I was doing this podcast for about a year, and I was hearing how all the features were ending up on streaming and all the shorts, people just put them on YouTube and Vimeo, so to speak. So I brought together like 20 plus filmmakers and they all put in their shorts. And so we started a TV series on Amazon Prime Video called Discover Indie Film. That's an anthology of the best shorts from the festival circuit. So if people want to be nice, first like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever you're listening to this on, and go to Amazon Prime Video on a nice big TV and type in Discover Indie Film in search and enjoy short films handpicked from the festival circuit. And we talked about how All Eyes won the Grand Jury Award for Best Feature Film Horror at Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that sucker every November. In fact, I'm almost three-fifths of the way through of all this, the record number of submissions we got for this November. Way too many films to watch. But anyhow, so you can learn more about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival if you go to ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Sister Festival every June we hold called Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn more about that if you go to FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And finally, because I'm just really dumb and I can't hold back, I had an idea and I just went for it. I started a thing called TV High. If you go to watchtvhigh.com, or if you go to your smart TV, whether it's Android TV, Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Android mobile or iPhone mobile, you can type in TVHI and check out an app that is all indie stuff. And the reason why it's called TV High is because it's all wonderful material, but it might be even better to watch when you're stoned, if you can do so responsibly. I have friends in recovery, so I always say, if you can use cannabis responsibly, TV High is for you. And if you can't, please don't. Watch TV High sober. All right. Todd and Alex, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
It's been great.
My apologies. I hope people can tell your voices apart. We were on Zoom and I didn't give the Zoom intro where I said, you know, there's something funny about Zoom when you record Zoom, which is we never talked over each other, but then the recording has like this micro delay. So my apologies if you were listening to this and it sounded like we were talking over each other. I swear to God, we weren't. We were being very nice, respectful combo.
Be civil.
The twist is it's been Todd the whole time. There is no Alex.
There is no twin.
Twist.
There you go. Have you been tempted? By the way, I finally saw, after 9 years of film festivals, two fests a year, finally a kick-ass horror film that used twins to be like...
Goodnight Mommy?
No, that wasn't the name of it. But it was a guy was cloning. It was like cloning. And so the twins were playing opposite each other. So like, it was awesome. But anyway, I always wonder if one day you two will cast twins.
Oh, actually, we did in our first movie. We used our nephews. They're twins, and they're like, they're at the time they were three. How old were they? Three or four? And they're really
young. They're three.
Like, we have to use them in our. So there's like one scene in the beginning where they're Easton and Weston. They're both in it. So. They're great.
Wonderful names. Cute. All right. Well, I already thanked you both. And so now I'll just shut the fuck up and say, thank you everyone for listening, and I'll click stop.